call the April 8th meeting of the Shore-Nicker City Council to order at 7:01 p.m. First item on the agenda is roll call.
Stephen Jones, present.
Connie Warner, present.
Dana Wimmer, present.
Dolly Adams, present.
Present.
Matt Weber, present.
Thank you. Next item is pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one nation under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is a special presentation, a proclamation on the Fair Housing Month, which I will read to you. And it reads, whereas Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1968 has amended, prohibits discrimination in housing and declares it a national policy to provide within constitutional limits for fair housing in the United States. And whereas the principle of fair housing is not only national law and national policy, but a fundamental human concept and entitlement for all Americans. And whereas the national fair housing law during the month of April provides an opportunity for all Americans to recognize that success and goal of equal housing opportunity can only be accomplished with the help and cooperation of all Americans. Now, therefore, I, Dolly Ahrens, Mayor, City of Shore Acres, do hereby proclaim the month of April 2013 Fair Housing Month in the City of Shore Acres, Texas, and do hereby urge all citizens of this locality to become aware of and support the Fair Housing Law. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is 4.0, approval of minutes. We have here the minutes for March 25th, 2013. Were there any questions on this? I think I have one for David. I forgot to ask you. On the placement of the Shore Acre City Limits sign on 146, were they only going to replace the city limit sign and it was the responsibility of the Houston Yonkers to replace their own sign, or were they going to replace both signs?
No, they're not going to replace any signs. They're not replacing any signs, and we'll be replacing the city limit signs, and the yacht club will pay for the replacement of the yacht club signs, and we'll place them for them.
Okay, so the, I'm looking for this on there. We have it written here, Texas contractor will erect the city limit sign on Highway 146. So how should that read?
Well, that is accurate in the minutes. That was the conversation at that meeting.
Okay.
They have one sign, and they were going to erect it on a wooden post.
So that is correct.
At that.
As of that meeting.
Correct.
Okay. Did anybody sign anything else in here? Because I know my chief proofreader was about this weekend. Okay. If there is nothing else, has everybody had time to read this? Okay. And then in that case, I'll entertain the motion. On the motion, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is council report. And we have a couple of things to report. I spoke with Jack Rodriguez's office, Precinct 2. He's the road department head who was here last week with Commissioner Norman. And they have completed their survey work in the city. Their project is now out to bid, and they are still looking at beginning work in June. David and I attended a meeting hosted by the Chamber of Commerce, the Port Chamber of Commerce, and we gave a presentation on the state of the city.
Mayor, if I may, the completed survey and to go out to bid, which project is that? I mean, there were two projects
Sorry.
That we were talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot. This is the
was it Roads for Neighbors?
Roads for Neighbors.
Yeah, Better
Streets. That's the one that's going to be the asphalt and paving, not the concrete.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Other one is, hey Stan, were you there at the PSC meeting? No. Okay. Okay, I was just wanting to make sure I wasn't superseding something you were going to say, because Anita went to the CAC meeting, and one piece of information from that meeting is that TxDOT has indicated that they are going to repave Old 146 from Fairmont to La Porte in about 4 years. And I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly what transpired in terms of any discussion for the funding or on their long-term plan. The other thing she wanted to report is there was a pipeline break in the Exxon line that I guess served Lyondell Bell. It was a propylene glycol, which is used in antifreeze. And for those of you who don't know, it's also used in cake frosting, which you find in the reason I know this, I work in air pollution control, so, but not to be confused with the ethylene glycol, which is a poison. She wanted me to report it anyhow. I've got a note here. CenterPoint Energy is going to be having helicopters fly over their transmission line April 15th to 25th to do inspections. And they're going to be using two helicopters. I think they're blue with silver stripe. And they're going to be inspecting the line. And, Chief, I have the actual helicopter numbers here if you want to pick this up in case you get any calls on it. You can cross-check. And I believe that's it.
I'll carry a line, right?
Richard.
Yes.
Anything
I haven't attended any. I'm going to attend CCAP Wednesday. Maybe these two gentlemen will be there, too. Nothing like that.
Okay, next item on the agenda is 6.0. citizens' comments, if anybody has any items they wish to raise to council for an item that's not on the agenda, now is the time to do so. Anybody have anything? Nancy?
Nancy Schnell, the Chicken Bailey. First of all, I would like to welcome back and also, I just wanted to let you know, as walking the city, I have noticed that our Public Works Department is really stepping it up as far as funding innocuous line breaks and some of these water drains, which is helping as far as what our revenue expenditures versus what we are bringing in. So I commend them as well. On a not so happy note, I would just like to remind council, which is free, the mayor, this is after several emails about a council meeting 2 weeks ago, that I, as Nancy Schnell, am not a former alderman, I'm not a candidate, I'm a taxpaying citizen. And when I'm addressed in such a tone that is something that my mother really can't get away with now, that I find that to be offensive, and people have actually emailed me and said, what's the deal? Anita was able to engage in a conversation with David Salt and the mayor's yelling. So I'd like for you, and I'm not calling you out here, you probably don't realize you're doing this, to be mindful that I am Nancy Schnell, 616 Davis, taxpaying citizen, and I deserve to be treated with equal respect and the same decorum and demeanor and tone that anyone else in this room does. And I'm just asking you to help you. Okay.
Anybody else wish to address them? No?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see you.
Okay. David James, 1017 West Forest Avenue. I had to make a list tonight.
First off, there's a big election coming up. A bunch of people running sign campaigns, I think. And almost all of the signs in the city are in violation of separate two candidates. They're in violation of the Title 15, Chapter 255, Section 007 of the Texas Election Code. Just want to bring that to your attention. And trailers. I noticed tonight, here we go. So I don't want to be a bad guy, but that's just the way it is. There's a couple on the thing tonight. The one on Oakdale, it looks like they're making progress. Went by there today. And maybe you guys should extend it for a little bit. They've been doing it for a long time now, almost 5 years. The one on Medallion, there's no progress. It looks like a big site. I just gotta be honest with you. If I live next door to it, I'd be very upset. Unfortunately, I don't. But I do live on Forest Avenue. And there is a trailer 4 houses down from me. And across the street, my neighbor listed her house for sale. I was outside the other day, and somebody drove by to look at the house. And they asked me, what's the deal with the trailer down the street and the mess on it? And I said, yeah, maybe not. They just said, they'd take it up to somebody else. But the fact is, it is a mess down the street. And if you are not going to enforce the code, you just need to let it go for everyone, guys. I'm serious. It's been 5 years. 4 and a half, sorry. If you want trailers in the city, if that's what you want, then that's what you should campaign on. That's what you should vote for. It's just been too long. We're not making progress. And that is hurting the value of the house right across the street. I can tell you that from personal experience because I'm standing out there when the prospective buyer came by. Dogs. I think this is one of my everlasting thing here. More and more dogs. I don't know what to tell you. My wife doesn't even like to walk around the neighborhood again. I told you that before. I'll tell you that again. There's just dogs everywhere around our neighborhood. You cannot walk around the street. Today, I had a Dodge dog on Shore Acres Boulevard. And finally, I know there was some controversy about police chief and all last year, but I'll tell you what. I am happy with whatever policy Chief Newman has put in because I'm at home a lot now during the day, and I see patrols about every hour, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
We're going to talk about the campaign time violation. David, we're going to talk about the trailers that's on the agenda. Okay. Anybody else wish to address council? All right. Item 7, the C7.1 City Administrator Report. David?
Good evening. We have continued to make surprising progress in getting delivery of our Homeland Security grant radios for police and emergency management. We've got all the handhelds and all the mobile radios have been received and most of the accessories. The only thing we're missing are power supplies for 7 chargers. But other than that, we have all the other equipment in. Those are special trunk radios that will be programmed for the Harris County system. Harris County will program those. Unfortunately, we're not the only ones getting radios, and there's a lot of work ahead of us, so I'm told that it's about 5 weeks until we can get those radios programmed. As soon as we have them programmed, then we'll be able to put them in service and put the mobile in the vehicles. But we're real pleased to have about $50,000 worth of radio equipment from those grant funds. Saturday, we participated with LaPorte and Morgan's Point in the Household Hazardous Waste Day. I hope everyone took all their hazardous waste that they no longer need up to the collection site. I'm told that the Shore Acres Public Works crew manned the paint section of that. So if you had paint you were getting rid of, we helped facilitate that work. And I think they were happy to also be fed in the project. I don't think they were anticipating that. They weren't fed household hazardous waste. They were fed regular lunch. We were coordinated with the city of LaPorte. They have a valve that's in the left turn lane and center lane. There's a valve in a manhole at Shorts Boulevard and Broadway, or old 146. The valve is LaPorte's and the manhole is ours. The manhole was at the right grade. The valve needed to be adjusted to the right height and the road repaired. We were going to do that as a joint project, and LaPorte decided that they would bring a road crew. So they brought six people, and they made those repairs. They raised the valve, and they did the patch. It's really all in state highway area. It's a state responsibility, and it's one of those things that, you know, if you paint a piece of something, then the rest of it looks bad, then you paint more, and you paint more, and you paint more, and you, where do you stop? So the patch, the work that they did there is much more substantial than what we had in the past, but I think it just makes the surrounding area look even worse. But there was an improvement made there, and things are at the right height. We'll monitor that, and we'll put cold patch or other materials in there as necessary, and I'm glad to hear that somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 years, maybe the state will be taking care of old 146 and bring that up. At the last council meeting, I mentioned that FEMA was in the process of issuing new flood insurance rate maps, firm maps, that will tell us what elevation things need to be for participation in the National Flood Insurance Program, or just will have to be whether you participate in the flood insurance program or not. there were changes. I received the maps and the documentation today. There's a study that goes with that, probably about 5 inches of paperwork for that. Not reviewed any of the paperwork yet. Did look at the map. There are some substantive changes in terms of elevation requirements and shore acres. Surprisingly, the largest changes are at the west end of the city. The largest elevation increase is on Windleaf, which is about as far west as you can get in the city. We currently require construction there to be at 12 feet. With the new map, it goes to 17 feet. We have pretty broadly about 2 foot a change across the city or more, with the exception of along Miramar. Some of the properties on Miramar go down a foot in required height, and some go up only a foot. We also have an expanded VE zone, so there will be some additional properties. There are some properties that go out of the VE zone and some others that go in. So it's kind of a mixed bag of things. That'll be out for public comment. I'll be circulating the maps to council so that you can see what that is. The map by itself, however, isn't very illustrative unless you also compare it to the old map. So I'll be doing a side-by-side comparison and showing you where the changes are. We currently have 5 different flood zones. We're one of those unlucky small cities that have a lot of different zones. And with these changes, we'll add another one. We'll have 6 different zones in the city. The big portion here, the main portion of the city, in the middle belt is all at 12 foot, and now that's divided in half. And so part of that is going to 14, and part of that's going to 15. So where this building sits today, we would require construction at 12 foot. With the new maps, the construction would be required at, here would be required at 15 feet at this particular location. So those are all changes, and I'm going to be meeting with other area floodplain administrators. We're going to have a meeting in Nassau Bay and look at the maps and see if there's anything that's glaring there. You can make comments and you can challenge the maps, but you have to do that on a scientific basis. You can't do that just based on adverse impact, economic, or development. It has to be on the science that's behind it, which is the 5 inches of paper. It probably is less of a problem for us than it sounds on its face. And I'll explain that when we bring it back to council and discuss that. And those were the high points I had for you this evening.
I have a question for you on that report. Was there any reason given why the changes were put into place, scientifically or otherwise?
Yes, they review those maps about every 5 years. We had, it just depends on the cycle at FEMA. Our maps changed in 2007, and then this is the next round of changes. They're constantly reviewed. They're reviewed whenever they believe there's any changes in density of construction, and so higher priority goes to higher density construction areas. They also like to use empirical evidence, so whenever you have a major incident, they take that data, provide them with good information to rehash, and they also look at where you have subsidence or impact of sea rise level, like Gallison has had, and so all of those things go in the mix, but it is always on a 5 to 10 year cycle of going back and re-looking at those maps.
And rather than challenging, would it be impossible to ask them why ours changed so drastically?
Yeah, we're not the exception. Almost all the communities changed that drastically along Clear Lake and Galveston Bay.
I would be interested to hear what they have to have used as their the variables that have obviously have changed in their mind's eye that have required such a drastic change.
Yeah, they will host a what's called a community coordination meeting,
mm-hmm.
Which you can attend, and they will explain that to they have these community coordination ones that are specifically intended for city leaders and staff, and then they will also have public meetings that the public can attend and comment on those maps.
Thank you. Appreciate
You're
it.
Welcome.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I'm just curious as to what the impact is going to be. If you live someplace where there's 10 feet above sea level, so you're the cheapest insurance area as far as flood insurance goes, and now you need to be 15 or 14 feet, does that mean that your insurance is automatically going to go up in that type of scenario?
Well, they have what's called preferred policies, which is another way of saying grandfathered. So wherever you're at and whatever your current rate is will stay the same under the current law. Everything's subject to change in the future, but the way they're applying it now is it would stay the same if your home is below what the new threshold is. Where it makes an impact is being below the new base flood elevation on the map. You then are subject to substantial damage regulations, so if 50% or more to rebuild from any hazard, then you wouldn't be able to rebuild at that elevation. It would have to come up to the required elevation. If you sell the house, the new owners will get a certificate of elevation certificate, and they'll get the insurance at the prevailing rate that they come in. They'll still be able to buy insurance. It doesn't prohibit you from getting insurance as long as it's not a post-firm house, which means you didn't build it in violation. If it was accepted at the time it was built, but it will impact the rate. They'll pay a higher rate than you do. If your house is below, the next owner will pay a higher rate.
Howard,
when you prepare the old map and the new map for council, would you also put it on the website for the citizens to take
sure.
a look at?
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Monthly police department report. Dave, do you want to summarize the report?
As you saw in the monthly report that says in your packets, traffic stopped being down considerably over the last several months. There was only three thefts, three reported thefts in the city. One of those was another credit card theft fraud. Lady had a decorative pawn tub taken out of her yard. Probably done by construction work preparing her house. And thought it was junk or something out in the yard. And the only other one is a gentleman had a paper carpet installation, which wasn't done. So they're working on that to see if there's actually a criminal charge or anything on the file. It generally goes to consider a civil matter. So that's the only other thing we have. You already knew about the incident on March the 1st, the individual ran from the officer, but they tried to arrest another one. On March the 15th, one of the officers checked the motorcycle at about 10:30 in the morning at 105 miles an hour up there. He refused to stop and was eventually found hiding inside a business on Spencer, that farm and feed store that's across from the airport. He had several citizens who were just going out of their way to point him out. Thank you for us, so a lot of help. he was charged with evading arrest. Code enforcement, three citations were issued in March for code violations, two for dead trees, and another one for a dirt pool, which still hasn't been cleaned. And Officer Thompson just came back a couple weeks ago from Taser Instructor School. Taser's changed the rules on how they want officers certified, so we felt cheap of the city to just send one of our own officers to the training and instructors and having constantly farm it out to another agency, which is what charges us for that. And we're going to give all the, not all the officers certified, but the ones, all of us were at one time, several people have left over the years, so just a few of us left. So we're going to give the entire department certified and that over the next several weeks.
On behalf of David Jennings, could you please notify the officers to try to enforce that control between the dogs and the men?
Yes, ma'am. We actually get very few calls for loose dogs on more than about 3 or 4 a month. Most of the animal calls we actually get are for barking dogs and things like that. So we get very few loose dog calls. So I mean, if you see loose dogs, call us or the officers can go out there. Find them. Usually we don't have any trouble unless the dogs have tags and they're like, so you should find them. They're usually the residents know, oh, that's their dog across the street and something. If they'll call us, usually we can do something. We've always got really good cooperation from the residents about putting your dog up off and they don't realize you just got to come through some of them. You've got other orders.
I do have a question for Chief, if it's all right. Cats. Do you ever get called for cats?
No, actually we don't.
And the reason why I'm asking is, if a citizen has an instance where a cat is creating a problem, which we've had in the past, what is their avenue to rectify that situation?
The issue is generally if the resident is feeding the cat, mm-hmm. then it's their cat. Because some people, well, they're just a stray cat, so we like to feed them. If you're feeding it, it's yours. And basically, it's the same rule with dogs. You can't have 15 cats in your house. So we handle it on that basis. Cats are kind of a hard issue. Animal control doesn't really like to take them up because feral cats can't be adopted. And so we have an issue with that. But as far as cats go, if we do get complaints from residents, if the next door neighbor has too many cats, then we'll go through a normal process, issue the letter for violation of the city ordinance, and then go from there. Usually what we get is they've got a lot of cats next door, they're getting into your yard.
And that's kind of what I was getting at, the cats scratching on the hood of the warm car or something to that effect. If a citizen has complaint of a cat, then they would call you or call the police, rather, and they would, for lack of a better term, attempt to take action?
Yes, sir, we would. usually most of the cats, there are some feral cats, but actually a lot of them do belong to residents.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can, then yes, we try to find out who the owner of the animal. What's being usually the neighbors know is their cat over there, and then we can take it from there if we can.
Very well. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, as a point of clarification, there is, however, no cat at large prohibition or ordinance. So cats at large doesn't fall into that. And also, we have been moving towards having Public Works addressing the dogs running at large. We've sent a Public Works employee who now has received the training and will be receiving the testing to be an animal control officer. And so we're working with LaPorte, who's building a new pound, so we'll have extra capacity for our dogs at large.
Question a little loud right now.
Yeah.
At the last council meeting, there was a mention of an invoice for a rape kit. I didn't notice that in the chief's report. Could you tell us about that?
I don't really have that information, so I will defer to you.
We had a complaint come in and report that she's been sexually assaulted. In that case, since there was a short amount of time man in there, the young lady was transported to the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, where a forensic nurse administers that procedure. And then, of course, the agency is then billed for that.
Right. I noticed it wasn't included in your crime report. Why not?
That actually happened several months back. It took a few months for the bill to get. I mean, first we'll get the bill from UPMA. happened actually last year.
Okay. So if I were to file an information request, I could find out the details of that?
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Okay. Nancy?
I was just, I know that there was a DPS chase that occurred last Tuesday, and it terminated within our city limits with one of our patrol cars taken after, so I was hoping to address Chief Newman, and I'm very happy to say it was okay. But as far as the status of the patrol car and the damage to it, at the end that we just bought a new one, what kind of damage are we looking at? A total loss, or what is the status in that?
We're still waiting for the TML adjuster to inspect the vehicle and give us his estimate of the damage.
Thank you. Sterling?
A lighter note. So if we feed the coons their lounge too.
Yes.
I don't believe we have a raccoon at large in our ordinance.
Okay, monthly public works department report. David, do you want to summarize it?
Yes. We have restarted our use of boom mower. With the rain that we've had and the weather warming up, the grass has taken off. At the end of the last month, they're about halfway through the city. They started at the west end, so they're working east. And if you haven't seen them yet, there'll be a mower in your neighborhood soon. We've been fortunate not to have a lot of water breaks, and that has allowed time for the utility department to go out and locate some slow leaks or address some slow leaks that we've had for a period of time, and that work even continued today, making progress. Also, a little rehab work was done on the swing set at the park. You'll recall last year we replaced a lot of parts on the park equipment, and now we've caught up to the swing set. And one of the things we did on the swing set as well was for safety, is we replaced the common chain with a PVC coated chain, which is a playground chain, which keeps small fingers from getting in the links, because you can get in the link and then sit down and pinch a small finger. My finger would never get in there, but fingers we care about could. So we've replaced those chains, and I think that's a positive step. It also has another side effect there. It reduces the amount of time the teenagers spend on the swings, because now you can't throw the swing over and wrap the chain into knots, which is a common thing that we would have to go and undo at the park so the swings are usable. With the PVC on it, it doesn't make nice knots.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay.
On the park or the playground equipment, not the swing set, not the ladder, the jungle gym, where we have the four posts with the tan walking or ladder or swing walkway or whatever it is.
The bridge.
The bridge.
Okay,
yeah.
The bridge. One of the folks there out at the Instagram pointed it out to me with their kids up there. There is a big chunk of the fiberglass or plastic or PVC or whatever missing, and it's all rusty. And she was pretty upset. So she said, "Will you do something?" I said, "I'll mention it at the company."
Yeah. Last year we made repairs. That damage was noted 2 years ago. They've been monitoring that. It was cost prohibitive. We only had $5,000 for repair, so they did the most serious damage. We may have to remove portions of the playground equipment. Each one of those landings at each end needs to be replaced. They're $2,700 a piece just for the materials. The total repair is about $7,000 for the piece there of the bridge to replace and repair that bridge section. So it's at some point we'll have to decommission it or put it in a in a budget. We just don't have the funds to do that.
Speaking of the budget, has the, I guess you call it, the 50 cable been ordered yet? That was in the budget for this year.
Yeah, I'll check on the status of that. I don't know.
Any other questions?
How did the first of the month Monday pickup go?
It went better than it was projected to go. Initially, they were again telling us that they were having difficulty getting a truck here on Monday, and Mr. Sutton held the line and said that was completely unacceptable. They'd have to be here on Monday, and they did. And they got through the pickup. Today was looking to see if we had the totals of how many loads and the volume, and I don't have those numbers yet. But it was uneventful. We do have some properties that we sent them back to get, and we had some properties which we told them not to pick up because they're in violation of having had a contractor stack material up, and we're pursuing the property owners and the contractors to have those items removed.
Any other questions?
Yeah, is in those instances are citations issued or something else?
Well, we give them an opportunity to get that out of there, but you know, at some point you just can't get someone to take action unless there is a consequence. And yes, we will write citations for that.
Is that somebody hired to do the yard work? Stacking it up, you're talking about like building and remodeling.
In this case, it was someone who was hired to clear the lots.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that doesn't qualify for large, heavy pickup?
No. The intent is for a homeowner to be able to do their work. You may have an extra lot, and your son may take a chainsaw out there and spend all day and put a lot of material out there. That's okay. But if you hire a tree service and they're just trying to skate on not hauling it off, then that was not the intent.
Okay, moving on to 8.0 business. 8.1, consideration and approval of invoices. Can you work to the invoices? Yes. I entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the invoices.
Second. Dana, seconded by Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
And approved. Motion carried. Item 8.2, consideration and approval of resolution number 2013-106, authorizing the city administrator to contract for the installation of a 12-inch gate valve on a wastewater discharge force main. David?
Well, good evening. The direction of the last council meeting was to go out and seek quotes to do that. To look at having a rehab of the valve in place. We had a quote, which is in your packet last time, for $10,657, which was the low bid on the work that we had received from RMB. To kind of situate you here, this is a photograph of the valve in question. It is this valve here. And you can see they've excavated around the valve to have access here to the valve. That's also part of the issue of the valve, is that the valve sits so low that it's in ground contact. They have reconfigured the pipeline here over the years, and they have built the bank up and put this bedding material in here. And so a portion of the valve handle is actually in the gravel in the normal course of things. And also you can see that this piping, where it comes out of the ground, this is our force main, and we own this pipe and we own this valve, and our contractor 30 years ago installed both of those there in that place. About 2 feet of it is fiberglass wrapped for corrosion control at the ground level. This piping belongs to, and it goes way up and around, and I believe this is an anti-siphoning, and this is a metering run here. This all belongs to Gulf Coast Waste Disposal. This is an old way that they used to do it 30 years ago, and they're not doing that anymore. They can meter it without all of that. Our waste goes into this pipeline right here. There's an open channel there, and our waste doesn't go in there. It goes into this, and they're changing all of this piping. It's hard to see, but there's some test points here, and they're going to be redoing all of this piping, including the test points. So what they've asked us to do is not only replace the valve, but to elevate the valve up to where it can be operated properly and where it's not in ground contact, which makes perfect sense. It's about a $2,000 valve. We got 30 years out of it. That's a pretty good run for that valve. It's a cast iron body. The knife on it, it's a gate. It's a knife-style gate valve, and the knife is stainless steel, but all the rest of that is cast. We, and let me show you, this is the top of that. What you're seeing here is this is the stainless steel blade, the knife. This is the body of the valve. It's a 12-inch valve, and this is the yoke, and it pushes through there. It's an isolation valve. It's not really ever closed, except for when they're working on their pipeline and they need to isolate it off. The valve is operated by Gulf Coast Waste Disposal. It's there for their convenience. If you were to look at this valve from the bottom, you can see the valve body is completely shot. Not only is it rusting, but the steel is delaminating here. This is where the other half of the yoke connects. And you'll recall in the conversation, I said they didn't want to operate the valve because they were afraid it would fail. And I think they're probably right. It would probably pull that side of the yoke off without closing. That wouldn't cause it to fail or it would necessarily leak or anything bad would happen other than you just couldn't get the valve closed, or if you got it closed, you wouldn't be able to get it open again because it both pushes and pulls against that. This is the flange on our pipe, and you can see the flange here is also in very poor condition, and the quote that we had was for raising the pipe, replacing 3 foot of the pipe section, putting a new flange on it, and the valve. All the work on the flange going away from the valve will be done by Gulf Coast Waste Disposal. They'll be doing that part of the work. It would be a coordinated project between both of our contractors. They'd like to do all of it at the same time we do it, since we'll have to shut down our lift station to accomplish that work. It's a force main, so there really isn't any convenient bypass pumping opportunity or other things. It would increase the cost significantly if we had to intercept that line and handle it separately into another force main rather than just shut it down and do the work with enough manpower and equipment to get it accomplished in the 4 to 6 hours that we can have our plant shut down or our booster shut down. And last picture, well, I guess that was the last picture.